Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, well, good morning, LA. Well, it's almost afternoon, and if we're talking about the East Coast, it is definitely the afternoon. Once again, this is Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Marvin Smith. My partner, the other host, Alan Cardoza, will not be with us today. You know, as those of you who listen to our show find out that we're not always together in the studio because the work that we do keeps us busy in the field. And today, Mr. Cardoza is in, I believe he's in Georgia, doing the good works. So anyway, we have another exciting show. I'm excited about the topic matter. And like I say, each week, you know, this show will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, education in 21st century, and so much more, which Alan and myself, who Alan's not here, having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information, as we will hear today from our guests, who are working to keep you, me, and all our listeners and families mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. You know, the bottom line is just trying to make this world a better place. We will continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Okay, now, as I said, I'm excited about the topic matter. It's very controversial. It's something that I believe is we're hearing more about it in the news. And our guest today is going to have an opportunity from experience to bring some information, as I would say, front and forward, right before your eyes, right before your ears. And the topic is called trace amounts. Now, trace amounts, what does that mean? What is that, trace amounts? Trace amount tells a true story of a filmmaker, which is one of our guests this morning, is Eric Gladden, journey coping with neurological effects of mercury poisoning that he believes resulted from a vaccination shot that contained the mercury-based preservative Therosol. Which is interesting. I was doing my research, and it's just interesting. But anyway, trace amounts offers explosive commentary from a current CDC senior scientist who shares his thoughts on the CDC's awareness of the link between this mercury-based vaccine and the neurological damage it causes. The film also explores the alarming rate that the world population is exposed to mercury through industry emissions and the unsafe use and disposal, listen to this, of dental silver fillings. And here's another thing, fluorescent light bulbs. Interesting. So our guest this morning, Eric Gladden and Shiloh Levine. Good morning. How are you guys?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're great. How are you?
We're good. I'm good. It's always, I believe, is a very interesting topic matter. I believe our listeners are going to be very, once they get a chance to hear, as we go through this interview, I believe you guys are going to share some just incredible information. Real quick, let me just give our listeners just a little backdrop of who you two are. So Eric Gladden is he's majored in engineering at Oregon State University. And a tragic life experience in 2004 would change his focus to storytelling through documentary. And I'm going to let Eric, as we go through the interview, talk about this focus, this change in his life, this event that brought him to wanting to create this film, this documentary called Trace Amounts. Our other guest, Shiloh Levine, studied film production and theory. Her early works are mainly experimental and documentary short films. Shiloh has worked on several comedic films. She also has produced, written, and anchored for OTV and is currently focused on projects that inspire positive change. And so these two individuals basically have come together to create this documentary called Trace Amounts. So good morning, Eric and Shiloh. And I guess what my first question would be this. You know, I understand that when you began working on this documentary, Eric, you became very ill, and the doctors were having a difficult time trying to diagnose the problem. Can you elaborate? Because I think this is the backdrop that takes us forward.
Yeah, so it was in 2004. You know, I started developing some weird symptoms, sensory symptoms, specifically like sensitivity to noise and visual disturbances, and then it kind of progressed into more neurological, like muscle twitching and tremors and tics and all sorts of weird stuff kicking in. And I was seeing doctor after doctor trying to figure out what was going on. You know, they were running every test in the book, looking at every different type of neurological disorder, I guess.
Yes.
And what ended up happening, you know, they couldn't figure out anything. And through my research, you know, going to school, I knew how to research like mad, so I was researching at the same time with them. And everywhere I'd come across my, or, you know, look at my symptoms, I would see mercury poisoning. And I did talk to one of my doctors about it, and he's like, oh, there's no way it could be mercury poisoning. So, you know, I ruled it out just like he did, because where would I have been exposed to mercury? And what eventually ended up happening was I backtracked my symptoms literally to the day I got a tetanus shot and still didn't pin it to mercury. I thought maybe, you know, hey, I scratched my head with a rusty nail, and I thought maybe I had tetanus, and the booster didn't work. And the doctor, of course, out right away, and then the light match, you know, the 10,000 light bulbs came on when I figured out there was actually mercury in these tetanus shots as a preservative. It really has nothing to do with the vaccine itself. It's just to save pharmaceutical companies money and allowing them to be really lazy and unsterile during the manufacturing process, and I got severely sick from it, and that kind of stemmed and started the research.
Wow, interesting. And you know, I like, but you made this comment about the pharmaceutical companies being lazy, and as I would like to say, they're, you know, trying to preserve their vaccines for longer shelf life. And I guess, you know, the base that's in the vaccines is thimerosal. You know, with an engineering background, how does this all come together? Because I would assume as an engineering degree with a background, you would understand research and took you down that pathway. So, you know, maybe you can elaborate from that standpoint.
Yeah, and not only did I go through engineering school, but by coincidence, my career happened to be, you know, I used to manage the design and construction of these pharmaceutical manufacturing suites. And I know very well how products are manufactured. I know very well how they're filled through the fill line process, and I know very well how they're preserved. And, you know, thimerosal happens to be the cheapest route, the cheapest preservative, so bacteria doesn't get into a 10-dose, multi-dose vial when they keep breaking the barrier with a needle every time they load a dose. So, you know, they can have single-dose vials where they wouldn't need thimerosal. They could have use other preservatives, alcohol-based preservatives that are much less toxic, substantially less toxic. And, you know, when you're looking at mercury as the toxin, it's incredibly more toxic than lead. You know, imagine if there was even the tiniest amount of lead in these vaccines. Well, lead is in no comparison to the toxicity.
To mercury.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, I researched for the first 3 years just the science that showed there was no link between thimerosal and autism, because I had been seeing all over the news the words thimerosal used in relation to autism, and I knew I'd been destroyed by the thimerosal. And once I went through a process of taking these drugs that get the mercury out of my body and brain, all my symptoms went away.
Oh,
so once I started looking at the published data, that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, was putting out there showing the what the link of their Dimerosal and their vaccine program to autism. You know, I could call their bluff instantly with their unbelievably fatal flaws. And not only their fatal flaws, we got all their emails and closed-door transcripts from their meetings through the Freedom of Information Act that show they figured this out in 1999. They've literally known mercury and thimerosal is causing autism since November 1999. We have all their documents that show it. And now we've got their 17-year senior CDC scientist that is backing us up even further. So it's really unbelievable. What's happening here.
That's interesting because two things that as I'm listening and it comes to mind, two thoughts. They've known this since 1999. Why have they not made changes? And that's one. And I have a thought and an understanding why. And then two, I start looking at, you talking about the pharmaceutical companies and where thimerosal is probably the cheapest preservative added to vaccines. You know, which to me sounds like it's more about money, like anything else in capitalism. You know, how much, I hate to say it, how much money can we make? How much more, you know, when we're doing things to cut corners like we do, at the end of the day, when I think about production in my own experience, it's all about, at the end of the day, it's dollars and cents.
Yeah, you know, they did take the initial first step in 99 when they finally did the math. So just to put in a little more perspective,
okay.
You know, 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, children would get, as far as mercury exposure in these vaccines, a total of 4 DTP shots, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. So cumulative exposure of 100 micrograms of mercury. And for that, those exact decades, autism was 1 in 10,000. And then between 89 and 92. 1 in
10,000, right, okay.
And then between 89 and 92, they added 4 HIB shots to the schedule, 25 micrograms each, so that doubled the mercury exposure. Then they added 3 hepatitis B micrograms each. So we went from cumulative exposure of 100 micrograms to these children to 237.5 micrograms, and autism just launched. Literally, that was the turning point. 1989, the published status shows that's the turning point when the autism rate started rising. And they didn't do the math. You know, the FDA did not do the math of how much mercury these children were being exposed to until 6 years later in 1998. And when they did the math, we've got all the emails that show, you know, them saying, oh, man, we're going to be thought of being asleep at the switch in regards to thimerosal until now. That's their exact words. And then the American Academy of Pediatrics took a huge first step in saying, we need to remove thimerosal as soon as possible. When they saw how much these children were being exposed to, once the FDA did the math, they just kind of freaked out. Neil Halsey led the charge. He was the head of the American Academy of Pediatrics at the time. And they did a joint statement, July 7, 1999, with the United States Public Health Service, saying thimerosal needs to be removed from these childhood vaccines as soon as possible, exact words. Well, the Centers for Disease Control didn't want to label some vaccines good and others bad, so they really pushed back on the removal of this thimerosal from these vaccines. And so they didn't recall the vaccines. They continued manufacturing vaccines through 2001. The backstock lasted at least through 2003, well into 2004. And then in 2004, they did the most unbelievable thing. Once that mercury was removed from those vaccines, they started giving them to pregnant women, the flu shot.
What?
Full time. So now instead of giving it to a 10-pound baby who does have some ability to excrete mercury, they're giving it to a developing fetus, zero, the most susceptible group yet. So it's unbelievable what's happened. It really is. And no one can explain why they did that.
And that explains, I mean, that, you know, being involved in education, public education, K-12, I mean, there's just here recently, there's just been this, you know, rise on kids, you know, with autism, like I've never seen before. And you know, what you're sharing basically indicates why.
Yeah.
It just seemed like all of a sudden we're having all these cases. I mean, it was like, and you know, I'm trying to explain, well, why? We're just all of a sudden, are we getting better at diagnosing the, you know, the symptoms of autism at an early age, or or is there some cause behind it?
And that is going to play a role. You know, better diagnosing procedures, of course, will play a role. But to go from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 68 of today, you know, we'd be the most clueless society of all time if we didn't see 1 in 68 children. You know, 30 years ago, where were they all? Where are all the 1 in 68 adults? They don't exist. You know, it's simply not based on better diagnosing. Everyone knows from all sides of this argument that there's two components. There's a genetic susceptibility, so there's a genetic component to this.
Okay.
But there has to be the toxin. There's got to be the environmental trigger. And so everyone's kind of looking for what this environmental trigger is, and that's what the past 10 years of our research has been. Really getting to the bottom of what role thimerosal and mercury specifically has played in this epidemic, and we feel like it's played the primary role, and we feel like we've got the science that proves it down to the cell. And not only that, but all the documents from the CDC that validate everything, and their scientists talking to revalidate everything. It would be against the entire universe for this not to have been a major significant role in the autism epidemic.
In the autism epidemic, wow. Interesting. Okay, then you sharing that, then, you know, what caused you to associate mercury, the mercury poisoning that you experienced with autism?
When I got really sick from the tetanus shot, once I fully recovered, I just kind of wanted to, pretend that didn't happen to me. It was very traumatic, very psychologically traumatic. And I just kind of wanted to block it out and go on and live a good life. And I kept hearing on the news them talking about thimerosal and autism. So once I heard it one too many times, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna look into what this autism thing is. Because I only knew Rain Man. That's all I knew of autism when I saw the movie Rain Man. And I wasn't Rain Man, but literally within 5 minutes of looking into what autism was, I couldn't stop researching. And it was very clear to me that there were some big-time similarities. Of course, I was an adult when I got severely affected. My brain was totally developed. Children with autism, in our theory and many others' theories, is, their brain is affected while it's in development. So
in development, right,
there are
yes.
Some significant differences. And once I really started researching the full extent of what autism was, and not just what the American Psychiatric Association defines autism as, because they pigeonhole it into a psychological condition. And these children it's way beyond psychological. They have a lot of physical symptoms. You could almost define a whole new criteria, diagnosing criteria, based on their physical symptoms alone. These children are very physically sick, depending. It's a very, very spectrum. So a lot of them have severe physical symptoms. A lot of them have minor. Some might not have any at all and just have psychological stuff. So it's really been pigeonholed into being just psychological. And literally, we're missing half of the condition. We don't even understand what autism is if that's the case, because it goes far beyond the psychological symptoms they have.
So the spectrum is much broader than, and this is one thing I'm starting to see in education too. There's a broader spectrum now of autism, than what it was diagnosed prior. So it's interesting that you're sharing that. Here it is again that, you interview doctors, researchers, and other professionals around the country. What did they have to say about thimerosal? And how long had they known about the dangers? I mean, because, there have to be others who are in the field who are researching. I hate to use the word, but it's a word that supposedly we're protected by certain amendments called whistleblowers. But then again, that's a tough, when you start talking about whistleblowers and shedding light, because individuals start thinking about their reputation, their jobs, all the implications around it. And that's a tough position to be in.
Yeah. As we started, everyone asked me, hey, you're not a doctor, you're not a scientist. How are you, even talking about this? Well, we're taking the approach from investigative journalists. We're going talking to the doctors. We're talking to the scientists. We're doing the experiments with them. And it's been unbelievable, some of the scientists we've talked to. In fact, one was our biggest target, Dr. Frank Angley. He's, he did work for NASA and CIA and FDA and CDC. I mean, this guy has got more credentials than anybody I've probably ever known, and he did a lot of the studies three studies specifically, in the late 40s, early 50s, that showed not only is thimerosal not effective as a preservative, it's incredibly toxic down to parts per billion, which is almost unbelievable. So, a lot of these PhD scientists, because chemists get it, chemists really understand mercury and the periodic.
Yes.
Don't. MDs going through medical school, they're not told anything, taught anything about mercury. Maybe one class about acute exposures. They know nothing about chronic mercury poisoning, and that's what this is. This is a chronic mercury exposures where they're getting these bolus doses time after time, and it's building in their brain. It's cumulative in the brain, gets in the brain, it actually locks in. It converts to a different form and locks into the brain and accumulates. And so, you know, we've met with PhD after PhD after PhD that you know, just emphasize how incredibly toxic this substance is. And you know, the CDC has their boilerplate statements that, well, thimerosal is ethyl mercury, which is not dangerous like the neurotoxic methylmercury, and that couldn't be further from the truth. They've been using this for 10, 15 years now, and the science has matured so much that shows thimerosal and ethylmercury is actually far more dangerous than methyl. First of all, just in bare cells on brain neurons, it's 50% or 50 times more toxic than methyl. Ethyl is,
wow.
Which is what's in. And then as the exposure levels are less, it's even more than 50 times more toxic. And not only that, it converts into the inorganic form much quicker than methyl in the brain, which locks in and accumulates. So it more readily accumulates in the brain than methyl, which is what you'd get from eating fish. So, you know, that's one of their statements. And then the other statement is they say mercury's been removed since 1999. The autism rates keep going up. Well, first of all, it wasn't removed in 99. It lasted all the way until through 2003. And then in 2004, they added all these flu shots, and now they're starting to give pregnant, you know, they were given pregnant women these flu shots. And in 2009, 2010, pregnant women were given two mercury-loaded flu shots, one for the swine flu and one for the regular seasonal flu. So, I mean, that's never been done before, yet they want to claim mercury's been removed. The rates keep going up. And second of all, the latest rate of right now, 1 in 68, this is based on children born in 2002. So this is the highest exposed group yet because they got the fully loaded backstock of these thimerosal-loaded vaccines, and then they started getting flu shots in 2004. So, I mean, there's so much misinformation out there in the news media. Everyone's been so fooled to believe that mercury's been removed. The rates keep going up, and the science has disproved this. And, in fact, the science proves the exact opposite, and that's what we show in the film. We're very science-heavy and also very freedom of information document-heavy, where we expose through history what's happened, and we show the science that proves it in animals, in cells, all the way down to the cell.
Oh, interesting, interesting. That's good stuff.
And,
you know,
next.
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, I was just saying, and, you know, it's very clear what the susceptibility is. Like with smoking and lung cancer, we know at this moment in time that smoking causes lung cancer, but we don't know why everyone who smokes doesn't get lung cancer. Only some do. So some have the genetic susceptibility to lung cancer from smoking. Well, with vaccine, with mercury, we know, we've got it pinned down to the methylation transsulfuration pathways and these genetic SNPs, these mutations, that prove who the susceptible ones are and what the susceptibility is and why not all children who get these exposures develop autism. We've got that proven. So we've not only got the susceptibility proven, we've got it with the science that shows this proves why it started in 1931, why it started spiking in 1990, why there's some are born with it, some regress, why it affects boys more than girls, why they have the exact symptoms they have. Literally every factor in this autism epidemic is explained by mercury.
Wow. Well, I mean, great. I mean, good information. Well, here's another thought. I mean, you said something, you kind of alluded to it earlier. And, you know, in our society, you know, there's this whole thing about lead, how poisonous lead and lead-based paint, and, you know, we got to remove it from the shelves. All these things, all these the precautionary matters that we were going through, you know, even schools that had asbestos, you know, they're trying to get rid of all these toxins in the environment that's affecting humans and kids. But then again, what I'm hearing you say that this whole thing, this lead-based or mercury-based in the vaccine preservative is much more harmful than lead.
Yeah, there's no, you know, I've talked to in laboratories, it's like the scientists after scientists after scientists that have done direct comparisons between, you know, exposing brain neurons, let's say, to lead versus mercury. And the last scientist I talked to said mercury is anywhere between 1,500 to 10,000 times more toxic than lead. There really is no
really? Comparison. Wow.
By hazardous waste standpoints, I think it's known to be 25 times more toxic than lead, but that's hazardous waste standpoint, those are different calculations. When you look at direct toxicity on brain neurons or cells, it is incredibly more toxic. There's really no comparison. And imagine what the outrage would be if there was any amount of lead in these vaccines. It would be, you know, the whole country would be in an uproar.
be an uproar. It'd be outrage. I mean, it would be, oh my gosh, you're so right. But here it is again. I really believe, and I think that I know that. I mean, this film that you guys have put together, Trace Amounts, is it's going to be very informative information, good for the general public, good for people to know. I mean, I think a lot of times because what we don't know where to take a stand because we're not exposed to the truth as we're being exposed to the vaccines, which is interesting. What about this, John? Thimerosal, so we're looking at as a preservative in vaccines, and I would have to assume, my own research, that thimerosal is being used in other elements other than just vaccines.
Yeah, it's in a lot of other products, some drops and stuff. A while back, I'll let Charlotte speak to you.
Currently, there's over 200 medical products that mercury is still in, and not just thimerosal, but other forms of mercury as well. The FDA has an arm that took it out of over-the-counter eye drops and nasal mists and things like that, but they didn't remove it from prescription and pharmaceuticals. So there are over 200 medications out there that do still contain mercury, and obviously including thimerosal in the flu shot. So it's something that we are working on currently to try to get legislation. We're looking for a sponsor for a bill to remove mercury from all medicines, not just vaccines.
Right. Well, Shiloh, then I have a question for you as well. Then, until some bills have been passed, as a person, as an individual, as a citizen of this country, and there's a whole lot of us that are just mere citizens who we're not involved in politics. How do we protect ourselves? Well, I mean, how do I find out, or how do individuals find out? You know, how can we protect ourselves until some legislation is passed?
Well, you can vote with your dollar, which is you can make different choices on a daily basis. If you need to get the flu shot or if it's something that you want to do, you can certainly go in and ask for a thimerosal-free flu shot. When you go to buy a new light bulb, don't get the fluorescent compacts. Get in an LED because that one does not contain mercury. When you go to the dentist and you need a filling, ask for a filling that doesn't that's not an amalgam, not the silver filling that contains mercury. So there's things we can do in our daily choices where we buy with our, basically vote with your dollar, and if the demand decreases for these products, well, companies are going to want to follow where the money is. So if we're not purchasing, then they will stop making them.
Right. So it goes back to, once again, dollars and cents.
Right.
Okay, that's good. Another question. I'm just full of questions here. I'm just curious. It's just so much. Now, Shiloh, maybe you can explain how, I mean, you're not a scientist. I mean, what got you, I know you're more on the film side.
Yeah, I'm on the film side, and I also was a teacher of children with autism. So I have a background in that and in film. I'm not a scientist. I have taken science classes. Eric and I consider ourselves more on an investigative side where we go to the scientists to compile their information into a story format so that it makes it easier for the public to follow the history of why thimerosal ended up in our vaccines and why it's still there today.
Okay. It's good to know. It's good to know. Well, let me ask you this. Do you know the demographics, or Eric, either one of you, the demographics and statistics on the number of people given these shots each year as far as these vaccinations?
Well, we do know, if we're talking about thimerosal-loaded shots, we do know that the CDC purchased 60 million of the flu shots that contain thimerosal, the full 25 micrograms. We don't know how many people have actually received those shots because they're still out there and they're still being used. But I don't have a statistic on that. Do you, Eric? Eric doesn't either. But we do know that they're purchased, and doctors will purchase the multivial flu shot because it's the cheaper option. but it's, you know, a person, a citizen who's going in to get the shot, they really have to question, is it worth it to possibly pay a couple more dollars to get that thimerosal-free flu shot? I would say it is.
Okay. Then let me ask you, then what type of shots, I mean, if they're thimerosal-free, I mean, so what type of shots are children and adults being given that, that contain thimerosal?
So the flu shot is the biggest culprit because children, first of all, administered to pregnant women, and a baby is in its most vulnerable time when it's in the womb because it's going to absorb most of the toxins from the mom. So there's that going on. And then for the first year of birth, for the first year of a child's life, a child will receive two flu shots. And then every year thereafter. So that's the biggest culprit. And then there are also forms of tetanus that still contain thimerosal. That's the shot that Eric received.
Okay.
And the meningitis vaccines that also. And the other big thing that's going on right now is the vaccines that we've taken it out of in this country, we still sell those vaccines to developing countries. So Africa, India... Communities are receiving these vaccines that we will no longer give our own community with the full 25 micrograms of thimerosal.
Let's give it to some other poor country then, huh? Let's let them have it. Jeez. Interesting.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. When I think about, I know from this point forward, I'm not going to take another shot. I'm not going to even get sick anymore because knowing this information.
Well, I mean, I think it's a choice that everybody has to make for themselves, and we certainly wouldn't say that people should or should not, but we definitely suggest to find flu shots and tetanus shot without thimerosal. And something that's really important is if you are a consumer and you go to your doctor and you want to get that flu shot, that not only do you ask for a thimerosal-free flu shot, but you ask to see the package insert, because oftentimes found that the people administering these shots don't know that there's mercury still in the vaccines. They claim, no, it's been taken out, because they're misinformed through our media. So as a smart consumer, you should definitely insist on seeing the insert, because it will tell you whether or not that thimerosal preservative is in there.
Well, as a smart consumer, I'm just not going to get sick anymore.
Well, that's also
that's one way to prevent it, right? I refuse to get sick. I don't need a flu shot. No, but that's good information, which is new to me. I had no clue. I mean, I know our listeners. This is basically informing them as well. I can't believe that we are down to the next last 20 minutes of the show. Man, this information, it goes by so fast. But what I like to do, we need to take a quick commercial break. And once you come back, what I like to do is spend maybe the last part of the show and talk about the film. I mean, get on the creative side and documentary and what you guys have been doing to create the documentary. How did that work?
Okay.
All right. So be back in 1 minute.
Okay. Thank you.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Well, we're back from our brief commercial break there, and our guest today is Eric Gladden, and Shiloh Levine. And they have just created, they produced a film, a short film called Trace Elements. And those of you who have been listening, it's really unique and very interesting, the research that they have done to expose this whole thimerosal debacle, as one might say, which has caused an epidemic in autism in our kids. So what I'd like to do now is maybe just talk, have our guests have a chance to share, you know, what compelled them to put this into a short film for all to see. So Eric, Shiloh, who would like to start here? Who would like to share? Go ahead.
So I can talk about, well, Eric, do you want to talk about why you decided to make it into a film, and then I can talk about how I got involved.
Yeah, I think the reason the film came about was, you know, the more I researched, the more I would talk to people about this, and I would just, things would come out in no certain order, and people wouldn't understand it, and it would kind of go over their head, and I was just getting frustrated that no one was listening, and, you know, I felt like this would be a great medium for the general public to see all the pieces kind of put in order, kind of walking you through the history of everything and all the science put into a layman terms and all the prominent people that have been involved in this issue for so long and trying to fight it or vice versa and from all sides. We really tried to get as much input from all sides that we could, but some people obviously wouldn't interview with us. But I felt like I wanted to put it all in a way that made sense. A 90-minute film, the entire story in a way that people could follow, understand, and really grasp the science as well, and know what happened. I mean, this is something that I think the public is in dire need to know, because we're still in a dire situation. We've got pregnant women getting these shots with 25 micrograms of mercury, where you'd have to weigh 551 pounds to be within the federal guideline, and they're having children with autism, and everyone's like, well, you know, what happened to my child? Well, if we hadn't exposed them to one of the biggest neurotoxins known to man, I think plutonium is the only thing more toxic than mercury, as far as elements are concerned. So that was kind of the primary reason, and that's the reason I, in the end, just decided to quit my job and travel the country and interview pretty much every doctor and scientist out there, and really target the organizations out there as well, like the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Food and Drug Administration and Centers for Disease Control. You know, I tried to interact with them all as much as they would. A lot of them wouldn't go on camera, but they would talk to me on the phone, and I just literally wanted to get to the bottom of it and give the public the information that I feel is absolutely critical for them to know.
Wow, that's good.
And so I met Eric in January of 2008. And I met Eric in January of 2008, and I was teaching at the time because I had begun to substitute teach while in between filmmaking in Los Angeles, in between jobs. And I got so into teaching that I started doing it full-time, and I was teaching children with autism. But I did have this yearning to go back into filmmaking, and so I answered an ad that Eric had put out about needing help to make a film, and it was about autism, and he mentioned the mercury issue, and I had already started, I used to read a lot of health books, and I had come across the mercury issue, and a lot of my students had mouths full of amalgam. And I had started getting my own amalgams removed. So when I met Eric, he was talking about mercury in the vaccines. It made sense to me. It made sense that it shouldn't be in the vaccines. And so it was pretty immediate. The following week, we interviewed Dr. Harani, and I filmed that interview. And we've just been working together ever since. And we went on tour in 2008 around the country, just as we're doing now to promote the film. We went around the country and interviewed doctors and scientists and moms and politicians and compiled probably about 75% of the film. And, you know, one of the things we would do in preparation before we left in the summer of 2008 was we'd get together and watch documentaries and take notes. We like about this, what don't we like about this, and use that as some, at least a jumping off point for inspiration. And now we are on the tour, back on the road with this, in the same 39-foot RV, and we've been stopping in cities all along this country showing the film to to great reactions, even from people who come in who are skeptical or are only there because their wife dragged them there. Those are the ones that come out being the biggest advocates because they're so mad that they've been misled by the media. And then once they get the real and the real information, they're like ready to tell everybody they know about it. So we've had a great time going around the country talking to people. And just so you know, your audience, Marvin, can now rent the film through traceamounts.com and they can get a better idea of what we're talking about. Traceamounts.com, our website, has great resources. Our trailer is there. We've got articles there about the film and about the tour. We also have short videos, so if people aren't ready to commit to watching the whole film, they can watch little videos, ethyl versus methyl mercury, that show you why ethyl is not the safe mercury that everybody is touting it to be in the media. It's actually more toxic, and if you watch that video, you'll see why. So there's lots of resources at traceamounts.com.
That's good. That's good. Once again, that's traceamounts.com for that information. And I'm definitely going to go to traceamounts.com, I really want to see the full featured 90 minutes. I'm always looking at documentary. I always want to be informed. It's just good to know. So I would say then, Shiloh and Eric, that the way I would sum up your work, which is inspiring. But I would sum it up to be something that is raising awareness. It's informing and empowering the public to make positive choices at every level, whether it's in their home, at schools, or just the local or even the federal government. But is that a correct dictation of what you would say it is?
Absolutely. I mean, we want this to educate and in some cases re-educate the community because they've gotten such bad information. Or not, it's more like they haven't received the full story from the media. It's just not representing every facet of it. And so we want to give people this other part so they can make an informed decision, just like you're saying, and for informed consent, because a lot of people think that mercury has been completely removed from all vaccines, and that's not the case. And because our government isn't providing informed consent for the community, somebody needs to do it. So we have taken that on. And we're also, we are showing the film to legislators across the country. Bobby Kennedy is touring with the film, and he goes state by state to educate and talk about mercury and vaccines. And also to maintain choice for parents who've already have an older child in their family who was injured by mercury in a vaccine. They want the choice to be able to choose an alternative vaccination schedule for their younger child.
Right.
And mandates that are going around and the exemption restrictions, those rights need get taken away, and parents are really scared about that. And we're trying to educate people who maybe don't have a child with autism in their family, or maybe who don't have a vaccine injured child. We're trying to have them walk through those shoes for 90 minutes to see why this would be a scary thing for a family who does have that. And is it fair for us to let the government make these decisions for our families?
Good. Well, and you know, then I guess my last question, and then I have a couple of call-in questions. Man, time goes by so fast. And I'm gonna do this really quick. But so, what can parents of autistic children do if they believe they've been affected by the substance, by thimerosal?
Well,
yeah, I would say find a doctor that treats these children from a biomedical approach. Biomedical is kind of treating them down to the cell instead of main, just giving them Ritalin or some type of psychological drug, you know, anti-psychotic drug or something, and sending them home. That's not what needs to be done. These children have a lot of complications physiologically, and there's a lot of things that can be done to help them. You know, everything from diet to supplementing certain areas of the body that are affected, and also primarily getting the mercury out of them and do it very slow and controlled and safely, because, of course, there are dangerous ways to do that. And there are, you know, doctors out there when there is, you know, these type of, I would say, outside of the mainstream treatments.
Yes.
Those that take advantage of the system and just want to try to profit off it. So you got to be very careful. There's a big biomedical movement. There's a, I think it's a defeat autism now protocols that are used to treat these children from, you know, kind of down to this, their cellular levels. And there's a lot of recoveries going on. I've seen children far end of the spectrum, very severe, nonverbal, completely pulled out of the spectrum and no longer have autism and lose the diagnosis by the same people who have, who diagnosed them to begin with. So it is happening. There's a lot of recovery happening. It is possible to recover from autism, regardless of what anyone says. Children can recover from autism.
I'm and love to be reporting it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, that's good. That's great information. Great information, Eric. Yeah. Well, I, you know, and here's one of the questions that we have from one of our call-in listeners, and basically it's not a question, but they're just sharing from their heart. This is to, you know, you, Shiloh, and Eric. It says, a few months ago, Alan, which is the other host, my partner, had a guest on the show, Krista Vance, who wrote an incredible book entitled Meet Jamie Now. I have purchased multiple copies for many of my friends who have autistic children, as well as recommended for friends in educational and healthcare fields. I was online and viewed trace amounts this week. I will be doing the same with your documentary. Thank you for your wonderful work. One of our call-in guests. So, yeah, so, I mean, it's... You know, so we just, as we continue, as you said before, you know, the goal of this show is to, you know, inspire and educate and in some cases entertain our listeners. But more importantly, I like to say in a very cunning way, while we're entertaining, really educating, that we can go out and address these issues as the population, the general public. So once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for being part of the show. And I just want to commend you on your great works. And I will be going to the website myself so I can actually see the film in full. So once again, thank you, Eric, and thank you, Shiloh. Once again, this is Answers for the Family. And any of you who would like to go see the film, you can go online to traceamounts.com. And you can rent it. There's other information there for you. Once again, I'm Marvin Smith, your host, and this was Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Marvin.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.